Deprogram with Michael Parker on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, friends, this is the final hour of today's episode of Deprogram. I'm your host, Michael Parker. I'm honored to be joined by Matt Rodriguez. He is a 32-year law enforcement veteran of Los Angeles. He's now running for LA County Sheriff. He and I are going to return to our discussion in just a minute. I have to run one story past you that also relates to all of what we're talking about today. And there is outrage today in Houston, Texas, in the aftermath of the Uvalde, Texas shooting tragedy. The NRA is, that's the National Rifle Association, a very powerful lobby, is preparing to host its annual meeting at the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston over Memorial Day. And this happens every year. They have this every year. And I did not realize how big a thing this was. I mean, I knew how big the NRA was, but they're saying like 50,000 plus people show up to this thing. So this year they were going to have Donald Trump, Texas Governor Greg Abbott, Ted Cruz, many more high profile Republican leaders. Well, this is happening, unfortunately, just a few days after the Uvalde shooting. So people are really upset about it. Houston, for a Texas city, is pretty blue. It's also the biggest city in Texas and one of the biggest cities in the U.S. Ashton P. Woods, who is an activist and founder of Black Lives Matter Houston, says the NRA is not welcome in his hometown. These people are coming into our community. The system, the city of Houston, needs to kick them out. We have to be just as tough about these things as they are. And joining Black Lives Matter is Moms Demand Action in Indivisible Houston. Youth for Beto O'Rourke is the Democratic candidate for Texas governor, who basically kind of showed up at a speech yesterday being given by Abbott and yelled at him. Not the classiest thing to do. Some people liked it. Some people hated it. I don't think it was a great move on his part, but anyway, this is not the first time that one of these conventions has happened shortly after a major school shooting. Same thing happened in 1999, and there were 8,000 protesters. In 99, when the Columbine thing happened, they were going to have the meeting in Denver. 8,000 protesters showed up, and before they had the meeting, the city mayor tried to talk them out of doing it. The NRA did not relent. They considered it. They had the meeting. Anyway, this was the one where Charlton Heston, you know, raised his hand and said, you know, pry it from my cold, dead hands. So I bring this up just because this is all the things that happen after the wake of one of these. Now, on top of this, meanwhile, President Obama is being criticized for an extremely tone-deaf tweet that he put out yesterday, which said, quote, "As we grieve the children of Uvalde today, we should take time to recognize that 2 years have passed since the murder of George Floyd under the knee of a police officer. His killing stays with us all this day, especially those who loved him." You know, I don't know if now is the time to equivocate the two. I think it was a really inappropriate thing to say. He's being super criticized for it. But anyway, that is the state of disunity. You can't make this stuff up. This is TNT. We're right back with Matthew Rodriguez.
Clashing on the controversies.
It's a woke society, and I am fed up with it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
We are back. This is our final hour. I'm speaking with Republican candidate for Los Angeles Sheriff Matthew Rodriguez. And Matt, when we left it, we were talking about, you know, what should be the role of like a retailer? What should be the role of the gun companies? Who can we attack? And the thing that bugs me is when they talk about suing these gun makers, I mean, that's still leaving the person who pulled the trigger completely out of the equation. And I don't know, it just, I know that you're wanting to make a statement and you're wanting to get out there, but I don't know, that bothers me. I mean, do they sue car makers for car accidents? I don't know. This to me doesn't work. I don't like it.
Well, Michael, this is all just part of the liberal left narrative of, you know, trying to create this, I call it a utopian society that, you know, we don't have accountability, we don't hold criminals accountable. You remember a while back, some guy took a car and he ran over a bunch of people in New York. Well, yeah. I remember the media reported a car ran people over. No, the car did not run people over. The suspect ran people over.
Yes.
And look, if I thought that there was a reasonable way that we could control weaponry in this country and make it safer for everybody, then, you know, I'm all for it. But this whole narrative, the thing you did at the break, you know, those people that don't want the NRA in Houston are the same people that want their First Amendment protected when they want to protest. How would they feel when they want to come in with their narrative into Houston and the NRA says, you're not allowed here? Then, you know, all hell breaks loose. You know, we have a First Amendment and, you know, I think the NRA has a right to meet wherever they want to meet. The same way that, you know, these liberal left groups have a right to meet and protest as well. So it has to be equal, man. It can't just be one way.
And it's not equal. And we both know that. And I mean, it does not cut equally the same way. And I agree with you. Free speech is free speech. It is a critical component of the entire country. And I've been doing this kind of job off and on since 2006. And every time one of these happens, it's the same old, same old. And especially in election year, everybody rushes to blame, you know, everybody but the person who committed the act. And right now, you know, I mean, they're complaining about law enforcement, maybe not rushing in time. Well, what about the guy who pulled the trigger? This extremely disturbed young man who's disassociated. And it always seems like it's the same kind of guy, right? We mentioned this in the previous segment. It always seems like these unfortunately incredibly lonely, depressed, disassociated young people. But you know, it's everything but blame that guy. Let's blame Republicans. Let's blame gun makers. Let's blame the law enforcement who didn't go in there fast enough. It's always the same, except for the person that pulled the trigger who's now dead.
I understand that wholeheartedly. You know, you have a lot of heartache, you have a lot of pain, and a lot of anger. You know, these stages of grief, right? They're shocked, they're angered, they're sad, and eventually you just accept that your loved one's gone, but they got to go through these stages of grief. But we got to take a look at who really did this and why he did it. And you touched upon something. The studies that have been done by FBI and others of all these shootings, because there's tons of data now, they all always point to the same thing. You know, the students knew that the guy was off. He had access to weaponry. He's experienced trauma as a childhood. He's often bullied. You know, it's always the same narrative. So if that's the case, then we better put in some early warning systems to prevent these things from happening, because that's really what it's about. And then, you know, you can blame guns all you want, but, you know, humanity is violent and it's been that way. Think about what the Aztecs did and think about how people have acted. And you have one young lone wolf who goes and does something insane out of over 300 million Americans. And then, you know, it's just it just seems to create this discussion of division. And it's really not a time to divide. It's a time to come together.
I agree. And the thing that bugs me, Matt, is I had on a woman 2 days ago, a lovely young woman, and she was a respiratory therapist, and she has been she's vaccine injured in a way that is so profound that I can't even describe it. My point is, we are going to get really upset about this situation that happened. Meanwhile, there is a sanctioned program going across the United States that's damaging people daily. And there is no legal ramifications for those corporations that made those drugs. My point is, we have a whole array of issues, and we tend to dwell on the ones that are right in front of us for the moment. And the gun issue is always one of the biggest issues when we are doing things on a local and an international level that also cause harm to people. But it just doesn't, you know, there's a sense of proportion that always is lacking from this. And this thing with the gun argument, you know, we're going to go through it all over again. And this time, though, I've got a feeling this time they've got some weight behind it. And I could be wrong, but we are going into primaries in several states. Certainly this one, you're part of that. And we're coming up on a big midterm. I don't know. I do have a feeling that this time there might be some changes and not for the positive as a result of this. I could be wrong.
Well, you know, it all boils down to politics, and the politics all boil down to one thing. And I've learned this in my campaign. I've been campaigning for 15 months full time, and it all boils down to one thing: is money. You know, we have a mayor who's running in L.A., Caruso, who's put $25 million into his own campaign. He's doing exactly what I'm doing. You know, and all the challengers to the sheriff have raised out between $200,000 to $300,000. Sheriff has over $2 million. It's just really about money. And so I just, it's just been one of those things. We've always known that, you know, follow the money, right? But God, it's been really just eye-opening for me. And thank God for shows like you who want to have, you know, in-depth discussions, and you're not charging me to do this because everybody else does and, you know, or tries to. So it's really awesome that you do.
I wish I was paying you. I wish I was paying you. I wish I could pay you.
No, it's I'm just honored to be on, but it's a tough discussion. But as your constitutional sheriff, the only candidate who's you know, conservative, I'm interested in protecting your First Amendment, your Second Amendment. And as far as that vaccine goes, I'm not vaccinating anybody. I'm not mandating anybody to be vaccinated. I'm not mandating anyone to wear a mask. And I'm not asking anybody their vaccine status. And I don't come at people like some wild conspiracy theorist who's an anti-vaxxer. I was vaccinated, boosted, because I look after my 95-year-old mother. So she got boosted. And you know, I was fearful too, right? Middle-aged, a little bit overweight. And you know, so I get this vaccine, and what happens? I get COVID months later, sicker than hell. So I'm going like, wait a minute. So I had this radio guy the other day, and he was very liberal, trying to tell me, well, you know, the vaccine saved your life, right? I said, did it save my life or is it killing me? I said, I don't think you know, and neither do I. So because of that, I'm not mandating anybody to do anything, especially if it comes out of a needle.
Thank you. Thank you. And the only reason I brought that up is just because this woman, I mean, I am so, this segment I did with this woman 2 days ago has stuck with me. Like, I mean, her life is so completely ruined now, and she's from the medical profession. And anyway, my point is, it's like, you're going to come after the gun industry, but you're not going to come against the pharmaceutical industry when we basically just unleashed this thing on everybody without doing proper testing. But I'm going to leave that aside because I'm going to get mad. But let's talk about, yeah, you're running for sheriff. So let's talk about what your gun policy is and how do we get these things across to people. What, you know, you have rights and you should demand them, and guns aren't necessarily bad inherently. It's the person that uses them.
I've never known a gun to injure anybody on its own. Okay. Right. So I don't get me wrong. I didn't grow up in rural America where there were guns and, you know, in my house and, you know, gun racks on our truck windows and stuff. I grew up in a law enforcement household. The gun was a tool of the trade. My dad didn't have a gun safe. He used to keep his handgun in the top drawer. And, I never was a big gun guy. I get criticized by my own family for not teaching them enough about guns and having enough guns. I always just viewed it as a tool of the trade. But, you know, and I worked with a lot of guys that had hundreds of them and gun safes and everything. I never really understood that. But now I do as I got older, because it's a liberty thing to me. Right. Your First Amendment, you can go out and speak. Your Second Amendment, own and possess weapons, and so on and so forth. So my policy is a lot more liberal than what the current policy is with the sheriff's department. But it's not crazy, because a lot of counties do it around me. Ventura County, Orange County, San Bernardino, and Riverside, they all have a kind of a shall issue policy, and as opposed to a good cause. The current sheriff in LA County requires you to have a good cause standard. In other words, protecting your life, protecting your family, and protect your business, that's not good enough cause. You better have something better. You know, you carry a lot of jewelry, you carry money, you're a realtor who works at night in rural areas or whatever. Now, under my leadership, if you are law abiding and you have no violence in your history, arrests and what have you, you haven't been 5150, that you don't have a history of mental illness, you can show that you're sane, you're willing to purchase a weapon legally, you're willing to train with it and become proficient and show that you are proficient, ideally store it properly away from children, then as your sheriff, I shall issue you a concealed weapons permit. And that may be shocking to a lot of people, but it's not shocking to people who want to carry a gun to be able to protect themselves.
Matt, I agree. And like I say, I grew up with guns. I never really had any romantic notion about it. It's just something we had in the closet because I did grow up on a farm. However, as I mentioned in that first segment, it's like when COVID hit, I was like, you know, and this is, I don't, this is going to sound like I'm picking on law enforcement, but it's just logistics, right? So I live in a, I live in a regular kind of neighborhood, Valley Village area. And, but you know, sometimes some things have happened around here and it's taken quite a while for the police to get here because it just has. My point is, it's like, man, I can't wait. I can't wait for that. If something happens, if there's an intruder in my home or something's happening, I need to be ready to go to protect my family right then. I can't wait to make a phone call and call things in. I'm going to do that. But it's just that people need to think about that, especially in a city the size of Los Angeles. It's like, if you...
About you, 2 or 3 days ago, in the city of Walnut, which is about 5 miles from me, an intruder came into somebody's home in the middle of the night. The homeowner had a weapon, a gun, protected him and his family, got in a firefight with the guy and killed him. You know, I'm sorry, but that's just the nature of the business when you're breaking in people's houses at night. That could happen to you.
100%. And business owners, it's like, I don't remember which episode we were talking about the other day. Maybe I was speaking with you or our and something, but it had to do with the riots. And at the time, you know, a lot of people got mad at the Koreans because they were guarding their stores. But I'm sorry, man. Listen, if you're trying to knock over my place of business, brother, I'm going to protect it. And it's like, you have that right. That's just common sense. And so anyway, I just say this to the people that don't want to have guns. That's cool. That's your choice. But do understand that I need to protect my family, and I'm not going to depend on some outside force to be there right when I need them, because it may not happen. And I need to be able to stand for myself.
Well, you know, the spectrum is broad on this issue. I've met people on the campaign trail who say, hey, if I'm going to get shot, I'm going to get shot. I'm ready. I'll meet my maker. And I look at them, I go, you serious about that? You're okay with a suspect taking your life in a violent manner? And they said, yeah. And I go, well, not everybody agrees with you. I'm sorry. Mm-mm. There's people that, you know, they're going down fighting. And So it's a very broad perspective, but or spectrum. So there are people that say, no, absolutely not. I will be armed. And then there's those out there that say, hey, it's better to be judged by 12 than carried by 6. You've heard that saying?
I've never heard that, but that's a good lyric.
Yeah. And then there's another saying too. It's like, I'd rather be caught with one than without one.
Now that I know. And so you guys, I don't want to make it sound like we're romanticizing this or oversimplifying it, but these are the kinds of things, even though they're tough conversations to have and they're tough questions, it doesn't have to be tough. It's more about what you were given the right to do this. And as a responsible citizen, you can do this. Now, the problem is, which gets back to our original gun control question, and I don't understand how normally intelligent people don't see this, but this happens every single time. I jumped on Facebook today and all these intelligent, well-meaning people that I know were like, oh, you know, when are we going to do something? And once again, it's the Republicans' fault. And listen, you know, I'm more in the middle than anything, but the point is, it's like, as you said, gun control really only will apply to people who obey rules. I mean, it's like laws are only for people who will obey them.
That's right. The criminals do not abide by gun control. And if any of your listeners or you're ever bored and you really want to see some wacky policies, take a look at what California has done with what they call the definition of an assault rifle. Because you can actually have AR-15s right next to each other, the same capacity of firepower, and one is an assault rifle and one is not, because it stops like this and it cracks open and it only carries 10 rounds versus 30 rounds, and it has a vertical foregrip versus a horizontal foregrip, and it's such nonsense. And for every law that they create, the gun industry creates some what I call a workaround.
Yep, Yeah, and you're right. They've changed, because I mean, I had a UCLA constitutional professor come on one of my shows, and he's a liberal, but he was still pro Second Amendment for the constitutional reasons. And gosh, I'm forgetting where I was. Oh, so what I was going to say, and Matt, when I was talking about Texas, my home state, you know, apparently the rule is you have to be 21 to purchase the handgun. You could be 18 to get the long arm. I guess you need a license for a firearm, but you don't need a license for a long arm. Point being, it's like, I'm not saying that I don't want there to be any rules, and we could argue about whether any of them actually work or not. But I would say in the particular case of Texas, my home state, you know, I'd probably bump it up to 21 on the rifle. If it's going to be 21 for the handgun, I'd still say 21. So I'm not saying that, you know, there should be no rules. It's just, we have to realistically look at what those rules are and what the effect of them is going to be, because a person that is insane or a criminal is not going to, that's not going to matter to them. I just went on a rant. I see I've got to take a quick break. I'm speaking with Matthew Rodriguez, who is running for Los Angeles sheriff, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes.
Silence for thinking differently? Silence for thinking differently? Not here. Silence for asking questions? Not here. Not here. Silence for discussing the other side of the story? Not on TNT Radio. Join the conversation anytime. Search TNT Radio on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Getter, or Gab. Download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, TNT Radio.
Wokeness is infiltrating churches, and people don't really know what's hitting them.
Critical race theory assumes that racism is everywhere, it is in everything. These ideologies have crept into the church.
I have grown up with this invisible kind of bag of privilege.
And I know, as a white pastor, I have blind spots.
Reparations fits into the scope of the gospel.
It's a racist worldview. You're swimming in racism.
The social justice warriors say, if you're white, you are racist. And if you say that you are not a racist, then you have to be a white supremacist.
I see within evangelicalism today an attack on the very gospel itself.
Social justice doesn't have to do with justice, it has to do with Marxism.
Wokeness is now the dominant academic paradigm on many university and college campuses.
Many of our Christian universities have fallen prey.
I went to an all-black school, raised in a black context. Everything was oppression. White people are racist, cops can't be trusted, and this world is not for us, it's against us. We felt like the government owed us. I have a family, I have children, and I don't have a job. I was just, it was at the darkest point in my life.
Because I was white, would we have to divorce and separate due to my skin color?
Christianity enables people to find forgiveness and redemption. However, Marxism is completely vindictive.
There is no redeemer and there is no redemption in the religion of anti-racism.
I believe that the evangelical church today is going to have to make a decision. Are we going to submit to the culture, or are we going to remain true to the faith and take the consequences?
How the left is stealing your church. The invasion of the gospel of woke at salemnow.com.
Every 2 minutes, an American is sexually assaulted. The majority of victims know their attacker. It could be your friend, your neighbor, or someone you met at a party. If you said no, it's rape, and it's a crime. This is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Call the National Sexual Assault Hotline today at 1-800-656-HOPE or visit RAIN.org. That's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Democracy in Action. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This is Deprogram. I am Michael Parker. I'm speaking with LA County Sheriff candidate Matthew Rodriguez. And Matt, you brought up an uncomfortable point in the first segment that I brought up to people as well, which is just that, you know what, we could make guns illegal tomorrow, okay? But there's millions of guns already in existence. And, you know, I know that there's the occasional, gun buybacks or givebacks where you get whatever you get for it, and people are free to do as they please. But the uncomfortable aspect is like you can make as many rules as you want to make. But there are already an ocean of guns in existence. And guess what's going to happen once you make those guns illegal? Well, now you've just created a gigantic black market for guns because they're already out there. And the people that want them for nefarious means are still going to be able to get them.
The reality of it is every time some gun legislation comes into play, guns fly off the shelf. You cannot buy any ammunition. Yep. You ever try going to a Turner's gun store after legislation in California, you can't get ammunition. You can't. The more legislation they put in play, the more guns are sold because people feel like they're infringing upon their rights. There's a lot of people in this country that, you know, they really admire and uphold the United States Constitution. And when people start infringing upon that, they got a problem. I was trying to make some sense of that policy that you were talking about with the, you know, the gun 10-day thing versus the handgun. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to find some logic in that. And I guess the only logic I can find is that, you know, they probably figure a handgun could be concealed on your person. So, which maybe makes you a little bit more dangerous than having an assault rifle, even though the assault rifle, you know, it equates to more carnage when you want to do bad with it. So I think that's probably the logic behind that, but I'm not sure. I think I might agree with you on that one, you know?
Right. No, I agree with you. I mean, I was just curious because I'm like, you know, I got to, even though I love my home state, I want to see what's going on with it. And so, you know, I'm not against rules. If we could figure out reasonable rules, in this particular case, I don't know that there was anything. I don't know if what could be done, but let's just talk about the school and logistics. Like how, when you're elected sheriff, how are we going to handle the schools? Because supposedly if the first reports are true, this guy, you know, when he shows up at the school, somehow he still gets past a person who was at the front, who I believe was actually armed and did not take him on because the kid's wearing body armor. I don't know if that's going to turn out to be the truth, but that's what they were initially reporting. So what do we do? Let's just talk about just straight up. What do we start doing with schools here in LA?
Well, you got to take a look at the best strategies to reduce these incidents and minimize the school shootings. You know, because we have a lot of history now and a lot of data we can look at, you have to train the school staff on the profile of what the previous shooters look like. You know, look for and act on those precursors. You know, we've talked about it. The kid that's experiencing loneliness, he's been bullied, he comes from a family with domestic violence or other abuse in the home. You know, I don't want to say gamers alone, but fascinated with weaponry, maybe recently purchased weaponry, is using drugs, you know, listening to dark music. They tend to be loners. And I think the kids in the schools, you know who they are. And in fact, I was reading something about this kid in Texas that one of the fathers of his friend said, hey, you need to stay away from him because that guy, you know, could potentially be a problem. So there's a little mini red flag right there already that a parent was starting to notice there's something odd about him. And then, you know, you have to train the kids and, you know, run, hide and fight training for students and the staff. So, you know, initially you try to run from the threat. And if you can't run far enough, you got to hide. And if it's your last resort is to fight him. And then, you know, and then we have law enforcement's response to training for active shooters. We talked about that. That's been in play for quite a long time. So there's school safety plans. We have to do drills. We have to train. So it's all there. It's just very unfortunate. And I hate to say this, but I think we just need to harden the schools. Where I grew up in West Covina. I live here now to, you know, as part of my campaign. I went to Covina High School and I go up there often to, you know, utilize the track or what have you. There's a fence all the way around the school now. And it's not so, it doesn't look oppressive in anything. It's just part of society. There's a fence all the way around that school. And if you're going to breach that fence to come and do something nefarious, you're going to have to jump that fence. And ideally you'd come under the watch of the camera system, which should be, you know, 360 degrees, and people in the administrative offices should say, hey, you know, you actually have analytics now that can point to that. if there's an anomaly. I'll give you an example. If you have a school that's surrounded with a fence and you have cameras that are looking at it 360 degrees and there's an anomaly, meaning somebody just jumped the fence, that camera could alert the staff right away. Hey, somebody just jumped the fence by the baseball field. And then they get an eye on him. They should have security on the campus. And it's just sad that we have to say that, but that's just the reality we live in, Michael.
I agree. And I mean, everything you just described, like that's just common sense. It's like, we are surveyed all day, every day. I mean, there's cameras around you constantly. So why not put some of those around the school and then have it actively monitored? We give money away to things all day long, every day, you know, create a new position of a guy who just, or a person who just sits in there and watches these televisions or closed circuit TV, whatever, however they do it. And then, you know, there's also the discussion, do we arm teachers? Well, I don't know if we arm teachers or not, but I would say that we make it possible for a teacher who's open to do that and licensed. And, you know, maybe this person is ex-military. Maybe this person is ex-law enforcement. Or if retired law enforcement or retired military want to volunteer in a defense position at a school. I mean, there's just got to be things that we can do. And in the case with Uvalde, I don't know how this kid got past the person at the front, but I don't know enough to know what the situation was. But I think in a city like Los Angeles, of course, certainly, we have the resources and the manpower to fix these kind of problems and anticipate them and not let them turn out like this.
I've worked three different transit agencies. I consider myself to be a transit-related expert. I'm probably the only law enforcement official on the West Coast that has worked three. I worked for LA Metro as a captain. I was in San Diego as a deputy director of transit security. I was a security manager across six counties with Metrolink. And I could tell you, on many systems of transit, including New York, Philadelphia, Boston, UK, here in LA, you're not going anywhere without being filmed.
Right.
There's cameras all over the place. And it's not a situation where you need to have somebody watching cameras at all times, because that's just a huge resource. But they will alert you with a bell or a siren when it points to
Good
the
point.
Camera. So if you have a school administrator who's doing their work and all of a sudden they hear the big ding or a siren goes off and I've seen this technology. It's out there. It's affordable. But it's just a matter of them, prioritizing that strategy to keep the school safe and then earmarking the money.
While we were on break, a buddy of mine sent me something. He's listening to the conversation and there's also the idea that somehow that we have more gun deaths in the U.S. than other countries do that also have guns. And so people, we look at America and we have a global audience here and people look at as America as this gun culture, which, maybe it is, but different countries have different policies towards guns. And some countries that have guns don't have the percentage of deaths that we have here. But I would have to just put the idea out there that also it's like, look, a lot of the people that who are against guns are also, well, a lot of them are in the media. And so you're going to stop putting guns in your movies. You're going to stop putting guns in your music. Are you going to admit your portion of the glamorization and romanticization and desynthesis, or what's the word I'm looking for? Anyway, just the normalization of guns. It's like they love to point out how, we're not doing anything about it, but that's a huge component of just entertainment in the U.S.
Well, look at it this way. First of all, I'd be interested to know which countries that they're using to mirror ours with over 300 yep. million people. Literally probably yep. hundreds of millions of guns. And secondly, in some countries in this world, they don't have the freedoms that we have. Right. So, take a gun out in China and start shooting around. See what happens to you. See what happens to you in Russia if you do that, Singapore or, the Philippines or whatever. You know what's going to happen?
Yeah.
You're going to get taken out. So it's just, we have a lot of freedoms in this country. The guns are a big part of this country's history. And the United States Constitution is a problem for the anti-gun people, because how do they get around it?
Yes. And another thing that, you know, when the whole Ukraine-Russia thing happened in the beginning, I said to a few people, I'm like, listen, this is why you don't give up your guns. Because Ukraine, the country of Ukraine, they were able to fight back just because their own people had arms. And listen, what's going to happen is what's going to happen there. And probably we may be getting close to the end of that conflict, and it may not go entirely Ukraine's way. But I'm saying this not because I'm trying to make a joke of it, but this is exactly the reason that this was a constitutional right that we have. You have a right to protect yourself, whether it be an enemy, foreign or domestic, and the Ukrainians had it. And luckily they were able to hold off the Russians, at least for a little while, on their own dime, on the weapons that they had.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's the whole premise to the Second Amendment, is to be able to protect yourself against tyrannical governments. Mm-hmm. And the people, oh, that would never happen in the United States. Well, you know what? Look throughout world history, you'll see there have been a lot of tyrannical governments. So in addition to foreign and domestic, enemies, you also have to take a look at your own government at times to make sure you're protected from them.
Yeah, I think what our own government's doing is just trying to talk us out of them. And I don't know how long this is going to last. I think it's going to be indefinite. I mean, there's no question they would like to see us unarmed. But that doesn't work for me. And I just wish that my friends who are very idealistic about this could look a little deeper, because my heart breaks every time one of these school shootings happens. My heart breaks. I didn't even want to cover this story. I didn't want to have to cover this story. I've done it too many times.
But it's interesting you say that, because, they talk about us being desensitized or numb to these things. I was so affected by this that I got to be honest with you, I didn't watch any of the news coverage. Mm-hmm. I barely read some stuff about it because I knew I was coming on with you today. But mm-hmm. I just was so sickened by it that I really just avoided it. I mean, I'm busy in the campaign and all that,
yeah.
But it just was like, gosh, this one is so horrific. Do I really want to watch this? And somebody sent me that clip of the parents showing up with the yellow tape. That was it. I mean, I watched about 30 seconds of it and it made me sick. So, I just think that something has to be done. I'm not sure gun control is the answer. That's all I'm saying.
No, you're 100% right. And I don't have the answer, but a big part of the answer is how we're going to deal with mental illness in our country. And, you know, I don't want to take people's rights away. I don't want to be snooping. I don't like to see something, say something thing. But there is a time for people to say something about a person who is in their midst that they know is unwell. And so I think it's better to start there in some way and try to get to that person and try to get them some help before they commit an act like this, instead of just making some blanket statement like, we got to get rid of all the guns. Because this kid, you know, not to belabor the point, but here again, I think he wasn't having luck with women. He was unliked. His mother was apparently a drug addict. He didn't have a lot of money in his life. Yet on the other hand, not to get conspiracy minded, but yet the kid winds up with some pretty exotic weapons and is a relatively nice pickup, but we won't even go down that path. All I'm saying is that I think the first step is, yes, to just be aware of the people within our midst that could be potentially dangerous, need mental health, and there should be a way to help them without infringing upon their rights. And it probably starts with the social circle, the schools, to send up that flag first.
You know, interestingly enough, on this campaign trail, there's several things that come up, but it's just a recurring theme. Everybody wants to talk about crime, mm-hmm. homelessness, Gascone, and mm-hmm. then sometimes CCW, stuff like that. But, you know, the number one crisis, and I've been at this 15 months, and for me, the number one priority is mental illness, you know, and the lack of capacity to care for the mentally ill. And that transcends into the homelessness, because a huge portion of the homeless that we see in the streets are mentally ill. And if they're not mentally ill, they're substance abusers that are triggering mental illness. And I talk about this, and this is also an interesting anecdote. But in the about 1990s, the first time I saw methamphetamine hit the streets, and it would be an interesting study to see where are the users from 1990. Because what happened, if you remember, part of the precursor for manufacturing methamphetamine was ephedrine, which was, they found it in Sudafed. So Sudafed would get stolen off of the market. And then the government started regulating Sudafed. So what happened in Mexico, they had to pivot and figure out what chemical are we going to use instead of Sudafed, because we can't get Sudafed anymore. So they started using this chemical, I think it was called P2P, and it just caused psychosis. So a lot of the drug users in the 90s were like, hey, this is different. This drug's a little different than when I first using methamphetamine, because it had a different chemical. And I think it just fried the brain. So a lot of these people that are out here now were probably using methamphetamine back then and maybe even still today. So the mental health capacity in Los Angeles is completely non-existent. It doesn't exist. And this is where we get back to the liberal policies. Prop 47, the decriminalization of over 100 felony offenses, was sold as the Safe Streets Initiative. And George Gascon was one of the authors. Mm-hmm. And the premise was, we're not going to arrest drug offenders anymore. We'll decriminalize it because we're going to send them all to rehabilitation instead. We'll offer them rehab. Well, guess what? They didn't offer the rehab. They don't have the facilities in place. Programs are not there. So drug offenders are now roaming the streets with highly potent drug addictions that are expensive to fuel. And how do they fuel them? Through crime. It's that simple. So that's the number one issue in LA County. Is besides liberal crime policies, but is mental health facilities and getting these people who are living in the streets the help that they need.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back for our final segment, and we're going to leave this on an optimistic note. Matt's going to tell us how he's going to win this election and what we're going to do in LA to make the city that we love better. I'm speaking with Matthew Rodriguez. This show is Deprogrammed. My name is Michael Parker. We'll be right back.
Be afraid. Be very afraid. World Economic Forum President Klaus Schwab has said the future is built by the elites at Davos.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Let's also be clear. The future is not just happening. The future is built by us, by a powerful community as you here in this room. We have the means to improve the states of the world.
Yes, that's right. Klaus Schwab announcing to the world that he has the means to improve the world and that they are in charge of your life. Did anyone vote for Klaus Schwab? This is all part of the Great Reset. You will owe nothing and you will be happy. All your food will be delivered by drones. You will not eat meat. You'll have no privacy, but you'll like it. Welcome to Serfdom 2022. For the Morano Minute, this is Mark Morano on TNT Radio.
A man's home is his castle, but his men's shed, that's his kingdom. There are now more than 1,000 men's sheds across Australia, and they're more than just a shed. You can make things, grow things, find a mate, be a mate, shoulder to shoulder. The Australian Men's Shed Association can help to find a shed near you.
Today's News Talk Radio.
Today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
You are listening to Deprogram. I am the host, Michael Parker. I am speaking with Matt Rodriguez. He is a Republican candidate for sheriff here in Los Angeles City County. And in this last segment, I've posed this question to Matt before, but for the people that didn't hear that particular episode, I want to ask him again. Matt, what do you do first day in office when you win?
Well, a couple of things I want to do. One, just so people know, I'm balanced. You know, I'm getting reported in LA County as the only Republican conservative in the race. And then the next thing they ask is, are you the Donald Trump of Los Angeles? And, it's a natural question, right? So I just really want people to know I'm a common sense, balanced candidate. I've said this along the trail when I first started. I want to, implement the policy of respect. Minute I start office, 8:01 in the morning on Monday, what that says is that we treat everybody responsibly, ethically, sensibly, professionally, empathetically, civilly, and transparently. And when I get that policy out and every deputy acknowledges it and says, yeah, you know what? We are going to treat people with respect. When you see my logo, and I got it right here, and it says respect in the middle of the badge. So that's the first thing. The second thing I do is I unhandcuff the deputies and I get them back out to work, doing the work, the fundamental core job, which is to enforce the law and hold criminals accountable and have a consequence for committing crime, with the sole goal of creating a safer LA County. So that's the two things I do: implement the policy of respect and unleash the deputy. Well, I don't want to say unleash, unhandcuff the deputies.
Right.
Because that's a balanced attack. It's almost like my position on ICE. You know, I get criticized sometimes for it. You know, if you're in this country legally or illegally as an immigrant, and you're here to make a better life for your family or yourself, I'm here to protect you. I don't get to pick and choose how I protect or who I protect. However, if you leave that space and you now want to enter the space of violent felon terrorizing our community and victimizing innocent people, as your sheriff of LA County, I'm going to deliver you to ICE to have you deported to your country of origin. That's just balance, Michael. Common sense.
Well, and you've also said on this show that you would also go to the Board of Supervisors with an olive branch and try to get along with them.
You know, I really find it hard to believe that they're anti-law enforcement, anti-public safety. I want to go over there. I want to, with a spirit of cooperation, talk about what needs to be done. I did just a personal vendetta they have against the current sheriff. Right. I really believe that I can solve that problem and get the sheriff's department properly funded and then properly staffed. And then I say this: if they in fact say to me, oh, you know, we're not going to fund you, and they prove that they are anti-law enforcement, anti-public safety, I'm going to stand up on the podium and tell the world, you know, hey, the sheriff was right. These people are anti-public safety, anti-law enforcement. But for some reason, based upon my 32 years of cooperative, working with bodies of, elected officials and boards and city councils, I've always got along well with people. And I'm just kind of the antithesis to the current sheriff when you look at interpersonal communications.
No, I get that. You seem like a pretty easygoing guy to me. And I think, you know, when you make that effort to go meet with them and speak with them, I agree with you, man. I think this is personal. I think it's super unfortunate because we've got a city being held ransom between the two of them. But I think that, you could go in there and there's some other people running for that race with you who also, I think, could, you know, just common sense, just go in there and be friendly and try to work with them. And I think it would yield results. So I like that, but have to roll. Go ahead.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
I do have to roll back.
I'm sorry. I'm interrupting. But I was saying, what does it tell you when the sheriff's department is the only department out of like 30 something in the county that has a hiring freeze, yet they have literally 1500 vacancies for police officers, deputy sheriffs?
Well, I guess it's because we're not getting the money from the Board of Supervisors. Is that their answer?
Yes, because they have and they have a massive surplus because they're strangling the sheriff and they want him to fail because he's proven to be, in their eyes, unfit. And I don't know. He's just not a guy that gets along with people very well.
Well, that's not going to work. There was something I was going to ask you. I just forgot. Sorry, man. No. That's all right. It will probably come to me again. In these remaining minutes, what else do you want the city of Los Angeles to know about Matt Rodriguez?
Well, again, that I'm balanced. I'm experienced. 32 years in this business of a very successful governance, law enforcement. Grew up in a law enforcement family. My whole adult life dedicated to keeping innocent victims safe, but I want to do policing in a constitutional manner that's very balanced, where, you know, we're not viewed as the enemy anymore. I want to be viewed as, a guardian of the community and, not a gladiator, and also viewed as a peacekeeper and just trying to save people.
I like that. I remember what I was going to ask you. I was just going to ask you to explain, what do you mean by you have to kind of uncuff the deputies? What has happened that you have to free them from so they can do their job? Maybe I missed something. Explain that.
Well, it goes back to the George Floyd incident. You know, after that, we had social unrest. And then after that, we had defund the police. And then you have a DA that doesn't want to file criminal charges on criminals. So the deputy sheriffs are just completely demoralized. There's they don't feel like they're trusted. They don't feel like they're supported or cherished in what they believe is a noble, and I believe is a noble profession. So there's a 40%, almost 50% decrease in arrests under this sheriff. Yet we have 100% increase in violent crime and homicides. Those are very competing statistics. And I have to fix that. I have to let these deputies know you're supported by this sheriff. I will bridge that gap between those communities that distrust them and, you know, and create that respect-based model so we could just get back to normalcy. Because right now, L.A. County is not the L.A. County that I grew up in.
No, it's not. I've been here for 30 years. And I mean, just in the time that I've been here, I've seen it change a lot and not for the better. But it can be fixed. I mean, it's like I at one time wanted to bail and get out of here. I'm glad I didn't. And I have friends who are considering that right now. But all of these things are things that could be fixed. It just needs some good policy, good people, dedication to their job, and a desire to do the right thing. So it can be fixed and it can be turned around. And I think a person like yourself is a very good candidate to do that.
Well, thank you. You know, it takes the right leaders, and it's a quick turnaround. You know, when leadership changes, it starts at the top. It, you know, you just say, hey, look, I'm not tolerating these deputy gangs. This should not be the narrative. 10,000 deputies, you got a couple hundred guys that are causing problems. That you put an end to that, get back out to doing proper policing. If I stood up on day one and told the deputies, listen, you know, this 40% decrease in arrests is unacceptable. You're going to get back out and you're going to start doing police work again, but you're going to do it constitutionally, fairly, and you're going to treat people with the dignity and respect they deserve. You know what? I told the NAACP this the other night. Look, you need me in your community. I'm sorry. You need the deputy sheriffs in the communities of color, because I hate to be the one that talks about the elephant in the room, but Black men and brown men are getting killed in Los Angeles County. Now, if you want me to go in there and protect them, then let's get that done. And I'm not saying I want to fill the jails up with Black and brown men, but, you know, something's got to be done. We got to break these cycles of violence, of gangs, drugs, domestic violence, and everything else that is occurring in those communities. And I'm the only candidate that has the guts to talk about it. And you can't call yourself a tough on crime, you know, leader if you're not willing to call out George Gascon.
Agreed. Hey, let me ask you one thing about the deputy gangs right quick in the last couple of minutes. So this is something I didn't know a lot about until just recently. And I know that you're already understaffed, but can't you just say, listen, I'm going to fire you guys, man. I mean, if it's, you know, if it's 100 or so or 200 people amongst your force, I mean, why can't those people be fired?
That's exactly what I'm going to do. But here's the thing. You can't fire somebody because they have a tattoo. That's their First Amendment, you know,
good point.
Freedom of expression. However, if they're tattooed and they're conducting themselves outside of the scope of policy, outside of the scope of the law, then they need to be removed from the sheriff's department and the profession as a whole indefinitely. And then on the other second prong to that is on day one, when the new recruits come in from the streets and they walk in the door. And I know how that is. You're wide eyed, you're scared. And the first thing they hear out of the sheriff's mouth at 8 a.m. is, you're not putting a tattoo on you. And if you do, and you brand yourself and you separate yourself and you're now a liability and you're now on the radar, your testimony in courts is questioned. I'm not looking for that. I'm looking for leaders, not followers. And I share that with you because when I was 26 years old, I turned down the tattoo.
Good for you, man. And you know what? That's just any job. It's like, listen, oh, you're going to come in here and work at this job, whatever it is. Well, guess what? We have rules and you're going to abide by those rules. If you don't abide by those rules, then we're getting rid of you. So it's like, you know, this shouldn't look unfair to anybody just because it's law enforcement.
Look, nobody dislikes a gang member wearing a badge more than the good cops. So to me, it's like, I say this, you want to be a gang member? That's fine. But you're not going to be a gang member and a cop. That's not happening on my watch.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we're about to wrap this thing up. I've been speaking with Matt Rodriguez, Los Angeles County Sheriff candidate. Matt, how do we find everything about your campaign? How do we donate?
We're 12 days away from the election. When I first started this thing, we were 450 days away. I can see the light at the end of the tunnel. You go to Rodriguez for Sheriff, F-O-R-Sheriff.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. We're doing great. You know, the media is now calling me the only conservative Republican in the race. And ever since they started saying that, we had it was like turbo fuel in our campaign. We're doing great. We're excited. And we're hoping to come in second position to get into the runoff.
Fantastic. They said the C word and it's working out for him. Matt, thank you so much, brother. I wish you continued success. I'm wishing you luck, bro. I'm on your side. This is TNT. My name is Michael Parker. This is Deprogram. We'll be back tomorrow and hopefully we won't have additional grim news to report. But Matt, thank you.
Hey, thank you, Michael. Tough subject today, heavy subject, but God bless everybody. Stay safe. And hopefully next time we talk, we're talking about being in the runoff.
Amen. All right, you guys. Thank you, Alex, my producer. Kept me on the straight and narrow as usual. Does a great job. Thank you, CC Woods. Thank you, Salvatore Styles, for coming on in the first hour. We'll see you tomorrow.